This is The Tenth Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The Tenth Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. I'm Una Nowling, and behind the board today, substituting for Linda Wilson, is our sound engineer, Maria Vasquez Boyd. Hello, Maria.
Hello. Very good to be here.
Thank you. It's on this icy day, although the streets really weren't that bad. I only saw one accident unless the normal mode of operation of the vehicle was upside down, in which case everything was good. We're going to be covering two topics today. First, we'll speak with transgender historian and activist Kristen Williams about the recent repeal of Houston's anti-discrimination ordinance, which some are claiming is the first major loss in the war for transgender rights. Then we'll be speaking with Carolyn Gibbs, the founder and director of the Transgender Institute here in Kansas City. And also in the studio with me today is Leah Matheson, a registered play therapist, trauma therapist, and counselor at the Transgender Institute. And we have some interesting community-related news to discuss about the transgender issues in the area. I'll finish up the show with the community calendar update, but first, let's take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week. This first bit of news is actually an event announcement, which I wanted to sneak in early. For about two more hours, there is a Thanksgiving for Acceptance underway at Like Me Lighthouse. This is a Thanksgiving dinner sponsored by the Equal Trans Support Group there. And I know my friends Faith and Samantha are going to be there right now spreading some holiday cheer for folks in the community who may have gone without family or friends this Thanksgiving. Like Me Lighthouse is just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street. Street, Kansas City, Missouri. A new study from the University of Delaware Center for Political Communication found that a large majority of U.S. adults surveyed said that they favor protection from discrimination for transgender individuals, both in schools and in workplaces, and a large majority also support allowing transgender people to serve openly in the U.S. military. However, the survey found that only 51% of those polled supported the establishment of gender-neutral bathrooms in public facilities. Transgender support was divided sharply between Democrats and Republicans. For example, while nearly 3 out of 4 Democrats surveyed said transgender people should be able to serve in the military, only 43% of Republicans supported that idea. And Democrats backed the idea of requiring gender-neutral bathrooms in public places by a 2-to-1 margin over Republicans. The study also revealed a generation gap on transgender rights. Respondents between the ages of 18 to 34 were overwhelmingly in favor of transgender protections, while those 55 and older showed far less support. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has proposed updates to its 2012 Equal Access Rule, which prohibited federally funded housing from discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. But their new updates go quite a bit further and require sex-specific shelters to house transgender people according to their gender identity rather than their birth sex. And it also offers a definition of gender identity stating, quote, gender identity. Identity means the gender with which a person identifies, regardless of the sex assigned to that person at birth, unquote. This move will potentially help reduce the number of homeless transgender people on our streets, which is at an appalling level. 19% of transgender persons report being homeless at some point in their lives due to their gender identity, and according to the National Transgender Discrimination Survey, nearly 1/3 of those who attempted to access homeless shelters were denied housing for being the wrong gender, as they were called. A study led by Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health suggests that while most U.S. health insurance plans deny benefits to transgender men and women for medical care necessary for their transition, paying for sex reassignment surgery and hormones is actually cost-effective in the long run. The researchers reported that the cost of surgery and hormones was practically the same as the cost of treatment for depression, substance abuse, and HIV/AIDS, which can result when people are not allowed to transition and are not able to get mentally in a better place in life. According to the study leader, Dr. William V. Padula, quote, providing health care benefits to transgender people makes economic sense. Many insurance companies have said that it's not worth it to pay for these services for transgender people, and our study shows that they don't have an economic leg to stand on when they decide to deny coverage to transgender people. This is a small population of people, and we can do them a great service without a huge financial impact on society, unquote. In fact, the analysis calculated that the cost to cover transgender people would be fewer than 2 pennies per month for every person with health insurance in the United States. Texas Senator and distant presidential hopeful Ted Cruz engaged in free-form transphobia on a conservative radio show this Thursday with host Steven Crowder. Cruz ranted, quote, I'm the father of 2 daughters, and the idea that the federal government is coming in saying that boys with all their God-given equipment can be in the shower room with junior high girls, this is just lunacy, unquote. Cruz, of course, was alluding to the Obama administration's recent support of 2 separate transgender students who have sued their school districts after administrators refused to let the students use the restrooms and locker rooms that corresponded with their gender identity. And finally, a somewhat odd controversy has erupted over the trailer for the film Zoolander 2. In the trailer, actor Benedict Cumberbatch plays an androgynous model named All, and in one brief scene from the trailer, the 2 stars of the show question whether All is a male or female model, and if All has, quote, a hot dog or a bun, unquote. Several petitions have been started calling for a boycott of the film for mocking transgender, androgyne, and gender-fluid individuals, while other petitions demand to know why a transgender, androgyne, or gender-fluid individual was not cast in the campy role as opposed to a cisgender actor, just proving that some days you simply cannot win. After having viewed the trailer, my strongest urge was neither to start nor sign a petition, but rather to consider watching Mad Max Fury Road for the 9th time instead. I'm Una Nalling, and that's the transgender news for the week. Kristen Williams is a transgender historian and activist who has been working on behalf of the transgender community for more than a decade. She has worked wonders for homeless transgender persons, co-founding the first federally funded transgender-only homeless program, and has worked to provide health care for transgender people in the Houston area. She was also instrumental in the battle to allow transgender persons in Texas the right to change their gender markers on their Texas identification cards prior to surgery. She is the editor-in-chief of the Trans Advocate magazine and is well known for her investigative blogging to both fight ignorance and kill off some of the most odious urban legends about transgender people. I personally have been a great admirer of her hers for some time, and I'm very pleased to have her on the program today. To give you just a little bit of backdrop, we're going to discuss the rise and fall of the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, or HERO. This was a comprehensive anti-discrimination measure passed by the City Council in May 2014, which was recently repealed by Houston voters in what I would personally describe as being a conservative backlash spearheaded by a militant anti-transgender religious smear campaign. Why this is important to Kansas City is that the repeal of the HERO ordinance has energized the transphobic wing of the religious right and could very well be the first major battle in a new war upon our rights and dignity. Kristen, welcome to Trans Talk.
Well, I apologize, Una. I believe we've lost that transmission, so let me give her a call and I'll be right back.
Okay. The I'll just fill in some time here while we're trying to get Kristen back on the phone. The Hero Ordnance battle was an incredibly rancorous one, which filled the blogs online of transgender news sources and basically was a chilling case, in my opinion, of what could happen in another city that has a comprehensive anti-transgender ordinance, such as Kansas City itself. Okay, we're trying to get Kristen on the phone right now. I'm sorry we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. I could probably blame it on the snow or rain or something like that. We have seen similar backlashes in other cities that have had comprehensive anti-discrimination ordinances, as well as entire countries such as the United Kingdom and some countries of the European community. Are we able to get her on the phone yet, or okay? Well, I will.
You there?
Are you there, Kristen?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, thank goodness! I was afraid I was going to have to ad lib for another 20 minutes, and I'm just not very good at that. I'm very pleased to have you on the show today, Kristen. As I said, I'm a great admirer of the work that you do, and I hope you're having a great day so far.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. It's a little wet and soggy and a little cold here, but I understand it's really cold up where you are.
Yes, it is a little bit icy, but as I said, only a couple cars off the road. And well, let me start by asking you a little bit about the history of the Hero Ordinance. What was the original impetus for it?
Well, certainly there were a lot of LGBTQIA individuals who were interested in having an ordinance, a local ordinance that would act to hopefully protect their right to access public business spaces. Having said that, there was a wide coalition of individuals who supported HERO, everything from the Houston Partnership, which represents the vast majority of the big players in Houston, the Houston business community.
So this, and the HERO wasn't just a transgender or even LGBT protection measure, correct?
Oh, God, no. That's why LULAC and the NAACP and other groups supported it so much.
Now, there were, of course, a significant group of people who felt that the anti-discrimination ordinance should be repealed. Can you tell me a little bit about the opposition and how that developed over time?
Well, the opposition, of course, took up an old argument that's existed in specifically the South, that in Houston, anti-equality politics for a long, long time. Back in the 80s, the Klan, the Ku Klux Klan, marched through the city against an LGBT ordinance, claiming that if LGBT people have equality, that would somehow lead to their children being endangered. So they marched through the streets, the Klan did, with big posters and signs, you know, making that claim. And, of course, in the 80s, that logic worked really well, and that ordinance was defeated. And, again, that's the kind of logic that was used against HERO, and, unfortunately, the Klan's logic, once again, moved people to join together in anti-LGBT animus and vote against LGBT people. Certainly, the ordinance wasn't necessarily focused on just LGBT people. It protected your genetic information, people with disabilities, your marital status, the familial status, race, religion. It was a very, very comprehensive and rather boilerplate ordinance that exists throughout the country and has existed throughout the country for a good 20 years. So the opposition offered a couple of kind of good cop arguments that would say, well, some nebulous thing. We're not really defining that somehow wrong with the ordinance. And while we want an ordinance, this isn't it. And we just need to go back to the drawing board and recreate it. Some went against the ordinance saying that, well, this policy is no good because it's not a procedure. And that's right. Saying that all of the, you know, it wasn't the procedure for how to carry out this policy wasn't explicitly written. And that's just not how policy is done. But that was an argument that they made. And of course, the other argument was that if equality happens in Houston, then the children and the women folk will be put in danger.
Absolutely. That is a very common way to weaponize transgender bodies by the opposition.
Sure.
We're going to take a brief break for station identification here, and then we'll return to talk more with Kristen Williams.
This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Irish eyes smile at the country's first same-gender weddings, adoption reform expands Portugal's queer families, and a liberated librarian questions the original radical fairy. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
This Way Out airs 2 p.m. Saturdays, right after the 10th voice.
Dismantling Patriarchy on Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
And welcome back to Trans Talk, where we have been speaking with Kristen Williams, a transgender activist, historian, and just all-around wonderful person in Houston. And we've been talking about the rise and unfortunate fall of Houston's anti-discrimination hero ordinance. Now, Kristen, you, right before our station break, you brought up what was, I guess, the key point of the opposition, the claims that the ordinance freely allowed or even encouraged men to enter women's public restrooms at will, or what I've called for some time trans toilet terror. Houston actually already had a law in the books specifically prohibiting that, though, didn't it?
Of course, yeah. Of course, the talking point was the same talking point that was used against the ERA back in the 70s, and that was if equality happens, then men will be, then it will be illegal for men to hang out in restrooms and rape women and children. That was the argument used against the ERA, which defeated the ERA, and that was the same argument that the same kind of people trotted out against the Houston Equality Ordinance. And, of course, that's false. It's absolutely false. And since the 60s, I believe 1962, Houston has had an ordinance on the books that's actually a restroom ordinance that makes all of that kind of stuff illegal. And the things that the right wing was showing, claiming that would happen in Houston, was certainly illegal when they were claiming it. It was illegal when HERO was actually enacted and was active in the city of Houston, that imprisoning people, kidnapping people, assaulting people, creating a disturbance, peeping toms, all of that stuff was illegal. It would have stayed illegal. The other group went on camera and in the name of God lied and said that the equality ordinance would allow any man, specifically sexual predators, the ability to gain access and to rape at will, just by claiming that today they feel like a woman.
Yes, even your lieutenant governor went out of his way to give his opinion, saying that voters should take action to, quote, stop men who on any given day can consider themselves a woman and go into a woman's restroom. It defies common sense and decency, unquote.
Yeah, and actually, I wish the HERO the campaign for Hero was a little better at at going after the folks behind the anti-hero campaign. Their spokesperson, Jerry Woodfeld, is actually right now defending a real sexual predator who actually did go into the bathroom and actually did take photographs of women in the bathroom. And he, while he's protecting someone like that, he goes on TV and lies and says that, you know, suddenly if people have equality, then the type of individual he is defending will, that will somehow be illegal. And then there was Pastor Kendall Baker. He was a voice on the anti-hero ads. And he certainly took up that claim about sexual predators. He never mentioned that he was actually fired for sexually harassing not one, but two women. And then there's Pastor Ed Young, who hired a sexual predator as a youth minister who went on to assault numerous little girls. And that went on for a period of time while his church looked the other way. And then there was Pastor Becky Riddle of the Houston's Grace Mega Church, who stood up before city council and looked at the Jewish city council member, Ellen Cohen, and said that it was her right as a Christian to refuse service to Jews. And then, of course, there was a money man behind this entire thing. He was recently took to stage, to a stage at an anti-hero thing, and pulled out, unsheathed a sword, started waving it around, screaming about how he's going to run the homo fascists out of the city.
He pulled an actual sword.
It was an actual sword. And these are the people who are behind this, you know, this anti-hero group. So this wasn't about... And actually, it was really telling, after Hero was defeated, Ed Young took to a stage and said, you know, this was never about the restrooms. It was about protecting the biblical definition of man and woman.
That with all of this cast of players, or rogues gallery, or whatever you would like to call them, it's somewhat ironic that the executive director, Tony Perkins, of the Family Research Council, which, for the record, is classified as an extremist group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, he was quoted as claiming that not only was Hero an ordinance which was solely intended to punish people who refused to celebrate transgenderism and homosexuality with massive fines, he also claimed that it was part of a vast conspiracy of transgenderism supporters in a war on Christianity, Christmas, Jesus, and what have you.
Yeah, those talking points play well with a certain base of voters who really believe that, you know, there's this vast conspiracy of queer people who are trying to bring down Christmas and trying to bring down Christianity, having full equality under the 14th Amendment is, in their view, a violation of their religious right to discriminate against you. So, there's a reason why those people are considered extremist groups and hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
So the history of the Hero Ordinance, the opponents were able to force the issue to be placed on the ballot for a referendum, and that referendum was voted on just this November here. And unfortunately, Hero was defeated at the polls by a vote of 61% against. Was that the outcome? I mean, I know what you hoped would happen, but did you think that it might have gone the other way? Was there some hope, at least?
There was certainly some hope, but unfortunately, some outside kind of larger groups from outside of Houston was brought in to run the campaign for Hero, And I guess they thought if they just took the high road and told people that, gee whiz, LGBT people are just like you and everything will be fine, that while a group that's willing to lie in the name of God and demonize an entire group of people on TV, that that would be an effective campaign. And it certainly wasn't. We had an enormous amount of material to be able to be used effectively in a political context in this contest, and it wasn't used. We had them on tape, their petition gatherers, committing election fraud, admitting that it was fraud. We didn't use that, and I think that was a big mistake. And in the future, I hope it's not a mistake that we make again. When it's a bit like bringing a smile to a gunfight. It's, you know, I think that we need to be honest about where the arguments come from, what their historical context is. You know, if someone's going to use the argument that the Klan used in the 80s, they need to own that historical context. They can't just yes. use it and distance themselves from the video and the audio and the pictures of the Klan saying the exact same thing years ago.
Now,
we can't. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to ask you an important question, though, especially when you're bringing up the fact that this there is a bit of history repeating here. And I've spoken with transgender activists from around the country who are a little – they've watched Hero go down in the polls in somewhat disbelief and horror. And what they and others are wondering about is what can other cities which have anti-discrimination ordinances on the books learn from the Hero defeat? What, as an experienced transgender activist who's been through the battle, what would you recommend that other cities do to be vigilant and to try to, you know, fight the battle differently next time?
Well, in order to fight the battle, first of all, they have to correct the record. The other side is going to lie, and they're going to assert that if equality happens, their women and their children will be raped. And that's the one argument that they've used against black people, against the ERA, against people with HIV, against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And they will use it here. They used it in the 50s and 60s and 70s against gay people. They're going to continue to use it. And the way that we fight it is by documenting their lies and documenting their behavior and making that known, making it well known that what's going on, so that we can't just say to people, hey, trust us, we're normal people just like you, we smile, we have families, we go to church, please don't vote against our rights. That's not enough.
You have to go on the attack more. That's what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is that we need to go on the attack more rather than the defense.
Oh, yeah. You can't just have good cop. You have to have bad cop.
Is there any plans right now for a Hero 2 or bringing the ordinance back in some form?
So, yes, and I certainly don't want to go on air and talk about what those plans are.
Absolutely.
But yes, absolutely.
It is an incredible effort that you have been through. I have followed this from afar, reading your blog, reading your news updates about Hero, and sitting up here in Kansas City, crossing my fingers and hoping that it would go down, because I see it as sort of a distant mirror of what could happen in cities such as Kansas City, Missouri, which has a very comprehensive anti-discrimination ordinance.
Well, it just people have to be clear that, for instance, in California, there was something called AB 1260. I think it was 1266. It was an anti-bullying law that would protect trans kids in school. And a hate group known as the Pacific Justice Institute tried to manufacture news stories wherein trans kids were portrayed as assaulting and peeping in on little girls using the restroom. And what I and other activists did was follow that each time a claim was made to investigate it and show through the investigation that in each and every case it was a hoax, and it was. Some claims were made about a school in California, and the authorities investigated it and found out it was a hoax perpetrated by a parent who they just made it up and went to a news organization which repeated it without fact-checking it.
And, if
and the exact same thing happened in Florence, Colorado. So people, the community itself has to be active in debunking the nonsense the right will come up with, because they will come up with it. We have to do a better job at fact-checking those assertions.
And if I remember correctly, the first time I ever met you online, so to speak, was when you were fact-checking and debunking those two anti-transgender efforts. And Kristen, we're going to have to break here for some music and then come back to talk to our other guests. It's been a great pleasure talking with you, and I wish you the best in the continuing fight and hope I can have you on Trans Talk again in the future.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And welcome back to Trans Talk. We were just listening to a little Shelby Lynn, who was singing Just a Little Loving for us here in our break. We're going to go on and talk to our next guests. Carolyn Gibbs is the founder and director of the Transgender Institute, which is located right here in Kansas City. And she is a licensed clinical professional counselor and national certified counselor who has successfully helped hundreds of transgender individuals in her career. And in the interest of full disclosure of bias, I must mention that I was a former patient of Carolyn, who I am not ashamed to say saved my life when I was early in my transition. She leads a team of therapists for transgender adults and children, and we have one of those therapists in the studio with me right here, Leah Matheson, who is a registered play therapist, trauma therapist, and counselor at the Transgender Institute. Some of you may not know this, but Carolyn Gibbs herself was also a former hostess of Trans Talk several years ago, along with another former hostess, Nikki Riley. So, Carolyn and Leah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Una. It's a pleasure to hear you at the helm. Wonderful.
Thank you, too. It's awesome to be here.
I have a couple of questions for Carolyn first, just to give a little background about the Transgender Institute. When did you start the Institute, and what was your impetus for establishing it, Caroline?
Oh, good question. Such a cliche, that word. This word's a good question. However, about 20 years ago, I met the very first people that I understood to be transsexual or transgender people. And they so inspired me by their own teaching in those days, in those very early days, now really 20 years or so ago. There were no therapists, there were no clinicians to help transgender folks. And so these few, this handful of transgender people, both trans men and trans women, went around the country teaching, if you can believe it, clinicians to help them. And so that very first impetus to move forward into having certified and trained therapists to do the gender work that's so necessary, that was the very beginning of it. And that was the beginning then of my own impetus to move forward and to do something about this terrible travesty of having an entire group of people marginalized. To me, it was horrifying, and I knew I must do something about it. Went back to school and began the Transgender Institute some 15 years ago, though it wasn't called that at the time. It was simply me, you know, trying to charge forth. And then about 7 years ago, I would say, Una, we named it the Transgender Institute.
Yes, it was when I first encountered you there. And you now have several therapists and counselors working with you, including Leah, who I mentioned is here in the studio. And how many transgender persons have you treated as a group over the years?
I would say well over 1,000 people in all of the years that we've worked. We tend not to, though we didn't understand this in the very beginning, I must admit. We believe now that it's not good to keep people in therapy for a very long time. That is simply unethical in our view. Unless someone has a coexisting condition such as depression or bipolar disorder, which requires extra attention, generally speaking, we want to help people and help them move on into their lives of joy and fulfillment. So for that reason, we're able to treat more people and help more people move forward.
Now, Leah, I think you are one of the newest counselors at the Transgender Institute. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
And could you describe the sort of work that you do at the Transgender Institute?
Yes, I work with the children and families. I help on two different areas with the children. Some children are, exploring their gender and, looking through who they are, and we're helping them express their feelings and do the gender exploration and build those coping skills. And then I also work with the children of transgender parents through usually after their parent has transitioned. It's really hard on the family, and there's a grief and loss, and so I help the children through that process as well.
Now, that is something that doesn't normally get discussed, and I confess I don't think about that often. When you mentioned it earlier, it shocked me that the children of transgender parents really do need a bit of help and support and counseling, and I'm very glad to see that you all are doing that as well. What other services do you have at the Transgender Institute besides counseling, Carolyn?
Oh, we have so many, too many to mention in 2 hours, I believe. I sat down the other day, Una, and I wrote down a list, and it ended up being 4 to 5 pages, so we won't go through all of that. However, our main thrust is therapeutic. We work with people in intimate settings, one-on-one, with families. We work with trans men and trans women, and we run the whole gamut virtually of people who are coming for assistance with being transgender. How also, this is something that I will let everyone know, that includes Una and her wonderful, as I call it, online newspaper, which is called Trans Talk, and that is that the Transgender Institute and Trans Talk did a kind of merging not so long ago, and the upshot, the first upshot of that merging, and something that directly influences the Transgender Institute, is that Una will be teaching trans history. Probably we've been talking beginning sometime in January, and we urge everyone to attend those lectures. Those should be absolutely fabulous. And then the list goes on and on. One of the main thrusts that we realized early on in our work is that trans people need help socializing. Often we will have people who have never met one individual who is also trans. So we started a mentoring program. And in the mentoring program, that can consist of several different things, but the very primary thing is that a patient will be sitting and will be aware of what's going to go on, obviously, and I'll be with them, of course. And then a trans person who may be further along in their journey, in fact, almost always is further along in their journey in transition, will come into the consulting room, and we three will meet together. And oftentimes the mouths of these newbies, as I like to call them sometimes, people who are just beginning their work in transition, meet, if you can imagine, this glorious and inspirational moment when they meet for the first time the only transgender person that they are aware that they know. And it is a moment of great clarity for them, and as I said, great inspiration. And what happens, of course, along the lines of the inspiration piece, is that they now know for sure and for clear that they will be able to accomplish what this other person has accomplished. And that is one of the strengths, we feel one of the main strengths of what we do. And then finally, just to mention another bit of work that we do that I'm very proud of, and that is we go out and we train. We train in prisons, we train in corporations, law firms of every variety. We go to schools, colleges. We will be doing grand rounds at KU Med coming up in a couple of weeks. So we do that kind of work as well, and that spreads the truth on every level about the population of people that we call transgender.
The specific examples you've brought up remind me that some of the counseling process is a bit of a mystery. A frequent question that's asked with respect to transgender children, and I'm wanting Leah to address this, is many people claim that transgender children or children in general are very gender fluid by nature, or they may be doing a lot of play acting or pretending. You know, a frequent criticism is, well, my son thinks that he's a dog. Does that mean I should start, you know, getting him in the kennel club and everything?
Yes. Yes, that's true. We see and hear that a lot. And yes, they are. Children are naturally, you know, expressing themselves and figuring out life. Play is the highest form of research. And so they're naturally expressing themselves. And that's what we, in therapy, allow them to do as well, through all kinds of modes. Dress-up clothes, art. I even have some modeling, mustache stuff and beard, makeup, nail polish. Just all kinds of different ways that they can feel safe and express themselves and just kind of explore who they are and what they want to be. And we do that with the families as well. We can create little gender nonconformity sculptures, if you would, and talk with them and do family sculptures. And we do some sand tray work, but we give them that outlet, that place to just be who they are and express and figure out what's going on with them.
We're going to take a brief break for station identification and then return to talk to Leah and Caroline about some upcoming transgender events, hopefully.
Democracy Now! Broadcasts live from the UN Climate Summit in Paris through December 1st.
Hey, Michael. 8 tiny reindeer want to know what's on the next Arts Magazine show.
Well, Blitzen, on the next Arts Magazine show, everything old is new again as the Kansas City Ballet presents its annual production of The Nutcracker with new choreography. Then later, the Kansas City Repertory Theater will present its annual production of The Christmas Carol in the newly remodeled Spencer Theater.
What day is it?
Why, it's Monday at noon. Arts Magazine show.
And welcome back to Trans Talk, where I'm speaking with Leah Matheson here in the studio from the Transgender Institute. And on the phone, we have Carolyn Gibbs, the founder of the Transgender Institute. I had another question for Leah that actually was passed on from a friend, and that was, what percentage of the children that you treat or that the children that the Transgender Institute treats turn out to actually be transgender versus others that may not actually be transgender enough or may be not be gender fluid enough that it's actually something that falls within your domain?
Well, That's a tough one on percentages because there's research and whatnot out there as well. But a lot of times treating them, I don't know that I have exact number for you, Una, but they can fall on the spectrum. They can fall to be bisexual or gay. And then also some of them do turn out to be, you know, transgender. But that's a long process throughout. And I usually see them when they're children and they're still working through their teenage adolescence. And so I believe Caroline could speak more about her percentages. His mine are still out to come.
Yeah. Carolyn, what do you think about that?
I think it's almost impossible for us to know the percentages, and that's because we have not been working with children per se. Neither has anybody, really. Not many people at all. This is a fairly new field where people are suddenly getting in the last 5-7 years that children, too, can be transsexual at a very, very early age. And I would like to give an example of a young girl who came into my office, mom and dad, completely freaked out, not knowing where to turn, but knowing they had to turn somewhere, heard of the Institute, brought this child in, who at the time was just 4. This little girl said to mom and dad one day, "Mom, Dad, you know I'm a girl inside, right? You know I'm a girl inside. This is at the age of 3. So that is one point of the binary, we could say. Someone who is truly a transsexual kid. Now, the only way we can know this for sure is if consistently this kind of talk, kind of behavior, dressing up in very feminine clothes at school, wanting to wear feminine clothes, playing with girl, quote-unquote, little girl toys, all of those things must continue. And for us, it's a number of years that it must continue before we can make any sort of final judgment. And then, of course, it's not until puberty until we can make any sort of intervention medically, except, as I mentioned, the social intervention where we, if we are good parents and good therapists, we will make sure that this child has the freedom to express themselves as they feel and as they seem to be.
Now, one thing I want to bring up to in terms of a community-related event, many of our listeners, hopefully most of them, are aware of a film that is about to be released by Universal Pictures, starring Eddie Redmayne as Lily Elbe and Alicia Vikander as Gerda Wegner, Lily's wife, called The Danish Girl. And this film was based on the story of Lily Elbe, who was one of the very first transsexual women to undergo an attempt at gender reassignment surgery as far back as, I think, her first surgery was in 1930, and her final surgery was in 1931, when unfortunately she died as a result of organ rejection. Now, I know that you have a special event that you wanted to talk about in connection with the life of Lily Elbe and the film.
Yes, I certainly do. About a year or so ago, I heard of the film through Stephanie Sculpin, who's affiliated with the Kansas City Film Festival, closely affiliated and in a position of great power within that organization. We became friends, and I thought to myself, and I ran it past Stephanie, hey, look, why should this film be screened initially in Hollywood? Why not in Kansas City? After all, we have our own reality show. 2 reality shows, in fact, one several years ago that not many people know about, and another, New Girls on the Block, that aired last year. And I thought, the community is growing, and as you mentioned, Buna, before, it's a lively community. It's, I like to think, for them, in the main, a joyful community, a community of great closeness and moving along together, let's say. So I decided, look, let's pursue this. I don't know what the heck is going to come of it. It's just one of my wacky ideas, maybe. But I pursued it and pursued it and pursued it and talked to this person and that person at Allied, which is the publicity arm of Universal Studios. And so I got a point person at Allied, and she was assigned to me. And their answer to me, finally, about 2 months ago, was, yes, Caroline, we will screen this film for Kansas City and for the Transgender Institute on December the 15th, 2015, coming up, everybody, for free at the Glenwood Theater in Overland Park. And we are stunned. I've seen personally the trailers, of course, read the book, done some research. Una's the real historical maven, but I've done some reading, intense reading about this, of course, and study. And this promises to be well-acted, beautifully played, and just a stunning film. So it will not be aired universally until December the 25th, obviously Christmas Day, which, unbeknownst to me, is a huge movie day. So December the 15th, once again, is our date. It is free to anybody who is transgender, allies, and anybody in the community is welcome to come. There are seats for 200 people. Make sure that you get there early. First come, first serve. We will be sending out masses of invitations via email and through other medium. And we, once again, are realizing that sometimes what it takes is a dream, a hope, and just plowing on ahead. I was thinking when you were discussing with your guests previously, Una, that there are those glorious souls like Kristen who go into the darkness. They actually go into the darkness, these great politicians that we have in the LGBT movement, particularly the trans movement in my heart. And they fight against the darkness within the darkness. And we see our role as somewhat different. We see bringing light to the darkness. And so our major tenets, of course, respect first for one another, but also hope and joy as people move through their transitions and then move on to graduation from the Institute and then moving on into their lives to face whatever life will bring them as individuals. So we like to say we bring light to the darkness, but we also have such admiration as to be really beyond description for those people who move into the darkness and fight the darkness.
I think that is a wonderful and almost poetic sentiment, Caroline. And I would like to thank you very much for being able to join us on the show today. And I would also like to thank you, Leah, for coming in and braving the icy roads and fallen trees and everything else going on out there to join me in the studio.
It's been a pleasure, and as always.
Yes, it has been, and I appreciate meeting you. You're awesome.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I do know that it is time to go on to the Kansas City Community Calendar. So I will just kick it off by talking about another event which is scheduled for today. Tonight from 7 to 10 p.m., there will be the Fall Crawl, which is a pub crawl to benefit the Like Me Lighthouse. And this will take place at various drinking establishments along Broadway. This will be a team-based event with games and challenges at each bar with prizes given to the top three teams. Contact Like Me Lighthouse for more information, and you must be 21. 21 years or older to participate. On Wednesday, December 9th and December 23rd, Hear Me Out Toastmasters will be meeting at 6 p.m. at Like Me Lighthouse. Hear Me Out Toastmasters is an LGBT enthused group which meets to practice public speaking and leadership skills, and it's also a place where transgender people are welcome to practice their female or male voice, as the situation may warrant. They meet every third Thursday, and then every third Thursday, the Equal Trans Support Group meets at Like Me Lighthouse at 5 p.m., so the December event will be on the 17th. And as I said a little earlier, Like Me Lighthouse is just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm going to be heading down there after the show today to meet the folks celebrating Thanksgiving there. The Kansas City SOFA group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons will meet on the first and third Wednesday of this month. The December 2nd meeting will be a special one, which will be held at UMKC as part of the UMKC Trans Plus Allies meeting. This meeting will feature a roundtable of parents of transgender children and young adults. All are welcome to attend, and the location is the UMKC Student Union, room 302, on December 2nd at 6 p.m. And please be careful where you park, as I can tell you from personal experience that the UMKC parking police are quite diligent in their duties. The regular SOFA meeting will be later this month on December 16th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Leawood Pioneer Library, Study Room 116 at 4700 Town Center Drive, Leawood, Kansas. And finally, the Kansas City PFLAG chapter, which is for parents, families, friends, and allies of LGBT people, will meet on the second Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village, and on the fourth Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at Like Me Lighthouse. That's our community calendar for the upcoming month, and to all my transgender sisters and brothers out there, be exceedingly good to yourselves. And I'd like to thank you for tuning in to Trans Talk, which is this week's edition of the 10th Voice. I want to give many thanks to our special guests, Kristen Williams from Trans Advocate Magazine, Carolyn Gibbs, and Leah Matheson, both from the Transgender Institute of Kansas City. I'd also like to thank very much my sound engineer, Maria Vasquez Boyd, today, who did a wonderful job. You can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com. And next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart.